£6,000 on average, they say. If you've spent time and resources carrying out new product development or working on innovative solutions, you could reduce your tax bill or secure a cash injection of up to 25% of what you've spent. Stuart did.
My company, Travel Welfare, have been developing new cost-effective software for issuing vouchers to delayed flight passengers. Rift Research and Development helped me claim tens of thousands of pounds back against the staff time and material costs I invested. It was such a simple process and they completed everything for me, so I had nothing to worry about. I would strongly recommend Rift and I'll be using them again.
To find out if your business is eligible, visit innovationreward.co.uk today. That's innovationreward.co.uk.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on kentbusinessradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, May the 19th, with me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Serkin. We've had loads of tweets. We've got loads of emails to read. We've got more guests to come on the show. I just want to read a couple of tweets that we've got. Thermal Printers have tweeted, busy making labels this morning so that we could listen into Business Bunker Show later on today. So thank you for joining us, Trevor and the gang at Thermal Printers. And you can follow them on the Twitter at TPS_repairs. TPS_repairs. Do give them a follow. And also we've had a tweet from D_Little_Dan. That's Dan Little.
Dan Little, yeah.
Yeah. And I think Dan was one of the people you interviewed at 2020 Live,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yes.
And we're going to play that interview on next week's show. So thank you for tweeting in, Dan. And listen out to next week's show because you're on it.
Which is not just any show, you know.
It's not just any show.
No.
It's something very special, isn't it?
Yeah,
you're trying to get wheedled in. You're making allusions, aren't you, to what is happening on the 26th of May on the show.
Well, we have Serenity Becker on.
The gorgeous Serenity Becker's going to be on.
No doubt you'll be putty in her hands.
I will be putty in her hands, as always.
And I will be bringing myself in some Riverford Organic Prosecco.
Yeah. Are you going to tell everybody why, or shall I?
I might. No, you tell them.
It's Jules's birthday next
bashful.
Tuesday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah,
it's Jules's birthday.
Tweet me.
Live
tweet
on
me
air later. Next Tuesday. Listener, it's going to be mayhem, I'm afraid.
When will the next one be? My next birthday?
The following year.
No, but on air on a Tuesday. Work it out.
I've no idea.
You're clever like that.
I've no idea.
You see, you normally have the figures.
I'd take one birthday at a time if I were you at your age.
How rude, because you're actually older than me.
Only just.
What day is yours this year?
Saturday.
Oh, that's very handy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're not coming to my birthday dinner, are you?
No, you didn't invite me.
No, I did. Oh. He refused, Ben.
I was working.
He's on a radio show again.
Yeah.
He's on every radio show.
Oh.
Yes, he's in demand.
We've had some tweets from a couple of new listeners. BGS in Greater Manchester. Vanilla Web, hello.
Gosh.
Can we have a shout out for BGS Manchester Expo and Conference on the 16th of July at the AJ Bell Stadium? If you'd like to know more information, you can call us on 0800 410 1050. That's 0800 410 1050. And you can follow them at BGS_Manchester. So there you go. That's Manchester Expo and Conference on the 16th of July. And my great friends, Duncan and the team over at Skyfleet Leasing, car leasing. Hello, having a great show. Saying hello from all of us at Skyfleet Car Leasing. So there you go. That's Duncan and the crew.
I've got to drive all the way to Heathrow tomorrow. I'm not looking forward to it. I don't really like Heathrow, do you, Ben?
It's
a bit big, isn't it?
All of them a bit bigger, aren't they?
Yeah. I liked Manston.
We've also had a tweet from Jason Kay. He says, Paul, hope all is well. Enjoying listening in today. So thank you for that, Jason, and thank you for your support. It's much appreciated. And then the lovely folks over at Telcare, the telecoms company over in Medway City Estate, Telcare Limited, and you can follow them on Telcare LTD on the Twitter.
I would like to say that my guest on the Superior Show, Scoff and Quaff at 11 today, was Jose Ortega Fournier. He's Spanish, you know, but he...
No, really. Kel surprise.
He is the wine that I've been partaking of, the Alba
the empty
Spiga.
Bottle of wine that you've got in front of you, yeah.
He is offering you a chance for wine investment. You can buy a plot, a couple of acres, for not very much money. What was it, 36,000, didn't you say, starting from?
Yeah.
And then you can have a villa built. This is for you, Ben, you see. You're a whippersnapper. I'll just have a corner of your villa. So you can actually buy the villa, have it made. You can have bespoke wine. I think it's very exciting.
Right.
And listen to Scoff and Quaff on the Play Again and find out all about it as a wine investment.
Fantastic. I want to tell you about a free workshop that's going down next week.
Fabulous.
It's a free introduction to internet marketing, and it's being staged by Virally, and it's taking place at Fruitworks in Canterbury, and it's Thursday, May the 28th, and it's in the evening from 6:30 to 9:30. And you can find out all about it by going to either the Fruitworks website, which is fruitworks.co, or you can go to the Virally website, which is Virally app. That's all one word, Virally app, VirallyApp, virallyapp.com. And that's a free introduction to internet marketing, and that's happening at Fruitworks on Thursday, May the 28th. That's next, not this Thursday, the Thursday after. So do get along to that if you'd like to participate. It is entirely free. What we're going to do now is we're going to have the second in our series from the University of Kent Business School, Business Improvement and Growth Project, the BIG project. For those of you that have been following this, over a long period of time, they've done an awful lot of research into the things that make SMEs successful. And they've produced a booklet which has 10 traits in it. You can download for free a copy of that booklet from the Kent Business Radio website. There's also a full report that's paid for that has all of the research data in it, and it's not very expensive. Fabulous. There is a link to that on the Kent Business Radio website as well, so do have a check out of that. But for the moment, on the last episode, we talked about the trait enthusiasm. This week, Dr. Simon Raby and Toby Lindsay are talking to Martin about the trait transformer.
I say.
Okay, great. Thanks, Paul. So I'm joined by Toby Lindsay as a researcher from the Centre for Employment, Competitiveness and Growth.
Hiya.
And also Martin. Welcome, Martin, to the show.
Pleased to be here.
From Seagrist Orrell, a manufacturing company in Ramsgate. And we've sort of been talking for many years. In fact, actually, just before we came on the show, Martin, we were speaking that we met back in 2006.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it, how time flies. I can't believe that it's already 2015.
You sound very depressed about knowing me for that one.
But not at all.
But yeah, I mean, I thought I'd just quickly introduce the work before I hand over to you, Toby. But obviously we've been working through the Business Bunker on an initiative called Business Improvement and Growth. And that's been focused as an output from a lot of research that's happened over the last sort of 8 years with businesses across the Kent region. And a lot of what we found was actually that businesses were not fulfilling their aspirations for growth and performance and what they wanted to achieve. And they were challenged by a range of different issues. And this is something that we wanted to explore more through the Business Bunker. And Paul very kindly has provided us with that opportunity. So we're really interested in understanding more about how SMEs grow and why some outperform others, and ultimately wanting to raise the competitiveness of the UK overall. So one of the things that has emerged from our work is something called the Big Ten, which are these 10 characteristics of success. So they are characteristics or lenses through which we can look into organisations and the way that individuals lead organisations to understand more about growth, performance, those sorts of issues. And we're going to be exploring one of these in each show over the next sort of 10-11 months. We explored the enthusiast in the last show, and today's show is going to focus on the transformer. So really looking at exploring that more. And the transformer focuses on around anticipating change and managing transition. So without further ado, I'll pass over to Toby to sort of talk with Martin more about actually the transformer and what it means in this context.
Brilliant. Thanks, Simon. Yeah, the transformer being about managing change and I think taking ownership of the change management process, not being just responsive to changes in the external environment, but actually getting, you know, the owner manager getting that headlamp, what is possible, creating the space for their strategic planning and using that to transform the business. And, you know, Martin, we know that you've been over quite a journey with Seagrist Orrell, and perhaps you could just say, you know, just give us the kind of the overview of that journey, and we can then go into specific areas of it.
Yeah, well, I joined Seagrist Orrell back in the end of 2003, and within a short period of time, had the opportunity to buy into the business and become an equity owner, and it was a 70-year-old business that was a family run for two, three generations, and it was very established. It was very good at what it does. It was a small manufacturing company centric on the UK market, and really it was about exploiting all of those things that it was good at, but at the same time dealing with rigidities in the business that had stayed the same for a very long time, and it was being sympathetic to the history and the business routines, but at the same time introducing a new direction of growth, product growth and geography growth primarily, to exploit all of its market possibilities, and you know, with that growth, various tensions in terms of existing teams, management teams, ownership structures, and I think the one term I would say that resonates in terms of what we needed was to be relevant in terms of the external market. So whilst it was a successful business, it was, you know, breaking even, and it was well known with its own customer set, but outside of that customer set it was relatively unknown.
Right.
And it was about breaking loose from that and growing and having relevance to its customers and its supply base. That was the key thing that we really needed to grasp. So that was the challenge.
Great. And what did you do? What actions did you take to really achieve that relevance? And how did that kind of
I'd been involved in a startup business prior to that for 3 or 4 years. But apart from that, I had no sort of classic training, and so a lot of the decision making was based upon, you know, gut feel, what felt right. So I had some knowledge of the industry because I worked within it previously, but in terms of senior, high management or executive level strategic thinking, there was no form of structure that I could go to a textbook and look at and say, look, this is what the conventional wisdom says on this, you know. So it was about making, first of all, the financial sort of sense making of the business, was making sure that any potential losses in operational performance were stopped. But more than that, it was about where we were going, what were our aspirations. It was about, you know, aspirations are quite a big topic over the last few days with the election result and how Labour are looking internally into the fact that perhaps they didn't hit the aspirational message as much as they could. But, and it was, I guess, in a very similar way, what we had to do in Sigurd Storrell is to really paint a picture of what the future could look like and really engage the staff to buy into that future vision, first and foremost, and then build a strategic plan that enabled that to happen, and then really focus on the senior management team's contribution and ability to perform in their role. And it sounds very easy and very simple when we talk about it in this context, but piece by piece by piece, you know, some of it was incredibly painful and other parts were absolutely fantastic fun. But that's what we had to do.
Yeah.
Primarily growth strategies we needed to look at. Mm. The two major ones were to enlarge the product portfolio, and the second one was to internationalise the business. So they were the two growth areas. And it was a big change because the average service time that we had in the business was about 22 years, and people were very used to doing the very same thing day in, day out, right, with very little change.
Yeah.
And so getting from one state, the original state, the great tradition of the business and all it meant, to update itself and become much more relevant in today's business and the future business was the big challenge. And I often, when I reflect on it, I often talk about the sort of Woolworths effect in terms of, you know, many, many people understood what Woolworths stood for and what the brand represented and what was on offer. But at the same time, those same people just chose to walk past the shop and not go in to buy the pick and mix or anything else that was on offer. And I think that was very much the same as our business. It was traditional, it was well known, it had been established for 70 years, it had a lot of traditional products. But many of our customers didn't stop to come in, and many of our competitors and people in the supply chain had respect for us but really didn't feel threatened by our presence or our activities.
Right.
And that was the current state back in 2003, 2004, and we had to move away from that in order to really survive and to prosper.
And where is the business now?
The business grew. We were able to open some offices in key locations to meet our customer location requirements. We managed to increase turnover and subsequently profitability. And 2.5 years ago, we were acquired by a large Japanese conglomerate, and our technology is now embedded into their global network, so we can sort of further exploit our opportunities. So the journey's been a very successful one. We've been able to secure the future of our site and of our workforce, but also we have much more exposure now to the global market, and our technology that we're manufacturing is now positioned as one of the leading technologies in a global market, whereas 10, 11 years ago it was something that was viewed as just centric to the UK and to a handful of customers.
Brilliant. What's that meant for how people work in the business?
People had to change, and the impact, I think the biggest impact would be at the management level, because there's a strong case for two simultaneous views in that perhaps people don't have the skills in order to move the business forward, but at the same time, if the business hasn't had the focus on investment and skills growth and encouragement for people to grow, then really the company at large has a lot of responsibility to make that happen. And so it was the sort of looking in the eyes of the organisation and getting the acknowledgement of change was necessary for survival and prosperity was one thing, and that was fairly easy. But the second thing that comes with that is the responsibility to actually change, and the fact that every one of us and the management team and every single worker had to behave differently and acquire new skills and a new way of thinking. And that wasn't always easy, and that transformation was harder for some people than others. But there's a huge responsibility for us as a business to make sure that we're providing the people the skills and the opportunity to do that. And there were instances where we had people that were right for the business, but perhaps weren't best suited to the roles that they had to grown into. And so there were some changes that we needed to make, as well as bringing new people into the business. And new people coming into the business was in itself a challenge, because that hadn't happened for some time.
Right.
And it was a complex mix of updating the skill base.
In terms of, one of the things I'm really interested in also is about crisis. Because crisis, when we sort of look into the way that organisations perform, actually can often provide a catalyst for change and performance and improvement and those sort of things. What role did crisis play, I guess, in the Seagrass Terrell world when you were working within the firm and leading the firm?
Yeah, well, the initial crisis was that when I took over as MD, the business was working at a break-even point, and so it wouldn't take much of a change of a tide for us to lose money. And the main crisis was the financial sense-making, to make sure that we actually had the right structure and the right cost base and the right revenues to match, because we didn't have access to a lot of capital. There was no debt in the business, and I didn't necessarily want to leverage the business at that time. One of the easiest things that we could have done was to perhaps trim the workforce immediately, because it wasn't that efficient in terms of the utilisation of labour, particularly in manufacturing. But my decision was to maintain the expertise that we had in the business, but focus much more energy on the business development, the commercial opportunities and exploiting, and understanding what our customers expect of us, rather than looking too much internally to do the short-term view of cutting costs just to make it
happen. Rather than the austerity kind of approach, you went for the investment.
That's right.
Focused approach.
That's absolutely right, yeah. Keeping one eye, of course, on the financial position. And that worked, and that was good. But we didn't really see the fruits of that for perhaps 1 or 2 years before that started to flow. So that was quite tough. So in terms of crisis and the big drive, that certainly would have been key to that. And the other one for me is that, you know, once you're in that position and once you have a responsibility to the workforce and to the business to succeed, you look at the quality of your own decision making, and you look for benchmarks. You look at optimum decision making. You look at your sort of social group or your peer group and your reference groups. And I went on a sort of personal journey of developing connections with, you know, the Kent Business School, and realised that there was a whole wealth of information, knowledge available to me, as well as the peer network. And certainly that personal learning journey was also a personal enrichment of a journey I went through that really supported what was happening in terms of the business. So those two things really, for me, were the primary activities.
And one of the things I'm sort of also hearing from that is to create that long-term approach, because you were talking about actually this didn't pay off for a little while, so mm-hmm. something strategically I had to look into the longer term. So how do you balance that short-term kind of perspective with a more longer term strategic perspective, especially when it comes to transition and change within the organisation? Because that's a very personal decision that you clearly made in this situation, and others may choose a very different approach. So yeah, how did you ensure that you kept that more strategic focus for the business?
Because it had 70 years of steady, stable business of serving the same customers. I never forget one conversation I had with a long-standing member of staff who was in the sales department, and after sort of 2 or 3 months of trying to modernise some ideas of getting basic customer contacts recorded and perhaps the use of technology like laptops and so forth, this particular individual came into my office and just said, look, you know, you need to understand, Martin, that you know, the customers that we have and we've always had for the last 20, 30, 40 years, they are loyal and they'll always buy from us. And the customers that are currently buying from our competitors will always buy from our competitors. Mm. And that's the way it is. And the quicker you understand that, will you please just stop this? And it's those types of things. These were good people. These were great people. And it doesn't characterise everybody in the business, but just one or two personalities. You know, their hearts were in the right place, but it was about trying to open up the possibilities and their view on the possibilities of what the market can offer, and actually by taking the lead in that, showing that's possible and some getting some wins in that way, then not only what you're saying may be inspirational, but actually what you do and the results that come from it support that. So I think it was very much an individual driven thing. I don't think there was too many external factors in terms of a great market change or great new product innovation that carried us through, but it was just seeing the new opportunities and driving the business towards that.
And you seem to clearly have had respect for the values of the business and where it's come from, and that sounds like it's been a really important thing to have achieved the engagement, I guess, with people in the business and getting on board with the change.
Yeah, the sort of respect for the company, the sincerity, the way in which you go about making those decisions and you know, garnering the change and the collective work, despite whether you may know best or otherwise, I think the way in which you do it you know, is very, very important. And had I taken a different approach in terms of a gung-ho or a much more sort of robust approach, it may well have backfired, and I may not have been able to keep the team with me in terms of that. So it was a very delicate balance between acknowledging the past, acknowledging the history and the quality and where the business was, but also with balancing that with what the future looks like and the opportunities in the marketplace and how different things could be for people individually and for the fortunes of the company. Because there were times that perhaps even the validity of the company may have come under some question by the workforce themselves. But it's the change, it's the doing bit, it's the actual activation and getting stuff done, which is the key thing, compared to actually putting the plan together. That's great, but you've actually got to deliver it and get some output from it.
So if there was one key insight that you'd say about managing change strategically for the listeners that are obviously listening intently to this show, what would be that one thing that you'd say was the difference that made the difference?
That's a really good question. I don't think I could say, you know, just take this one snippet as a takeaway, and everything will be fine. The sun will shine, and we'll live. Sorry, because each situation is very, very different, and that needs to be acknowledged. But I think that it's really, really important to, you know, understand the opportunities, understand what's happening outside of the business. And this particular business was very internally centric. It was internally neutral. It was externally almost irrelevant. And I think it's about understanding the core capabilities of the business and how that is relevant to the external market that you've chosen to compete in. And I would say that the key word, if there is going to be one, is relevance. What is the relevance of your business? What is the relevance of what you're doing? What is the relevance of the value proposition? And what behavioural things in terms of products or services that you can offer that makes your set of customers want to keep you in business and to keep coming back and buying a product or a service from you. So I would say the word relevance would be key for me.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, both of you. Thanks, Toby. Thanks, obviously, Martin.
Big pleasure.
You can find out more about the big insights and obviously these big 10 characteristics through the Business Bunker website. So that's www.kentbusinessradio.co.uk/B-G-insights. We'll be back again on the 23rd of June, which will be exploring the strategist and what the strategist means, and we'll also have Dr. Brian Harney, who's going to be coming to visit the show from Dublin City University. So he's an expert in strategy for small firms. So that will prove, hopefully, to be a really interesting session. Thank you very much again for that, and I'll hand back now to Paul.
Right now, there are small business owners like you claiming back on average £46,000 from the government. You see, the government wants to reimburse companies for innovation. What does this mean for you? Well, put simply, if your staff have spent time and resources developing your business, you could claim back cash. We're RIFT. We're specialists in preparing claims for small businesses. To find out from RIFT if your business is eligible, visit innovationreward.co.uk.
Jobsinkent.com.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Big thank you to Dr. Simon Raby there and Toby Lindsay and Martin for their in-depth interview on the trait transformer. What a fantastic interview and really informative. And we're really looking forward to the next episode, as Simon said, in June, where we'll be hearing from the lovely folks at University in Dublin talking about the strategist. As I said earlier, if you want to download the free booklet with all 10 traits in it, do go to the Kent Business Radio website, to our blog pages, and there is a blog post on the whole thing with a link to download. In fact, there's a link on the homepage at the moment as well. And on that page, there's also a link where you can get involved in taking part in a survey so that your business gets included in the next round of analysis and research. And there's also a link to where you can go to the University of Kent Business School and look at the other resources they have, including the ability to download a paid for full report on all of the research data that they've collected so far. Do look at all of that. It's all really fascinating and interesting stuff. And if you can, do get involved. Do fill out one of the surveys, if nothing else, because the feedback you get from that is really, really valuable. So I highly recommend that. I think we're going to read a couple more tweets now. We've had a tweet earlier on from Danny Tickner of Samsung Gas, and he sent us a rather nice picture from inside his car, which is where he's listening to the Business Bunker show.
Good afternoon, Danny.
Hello,
Tickner.
Danny. Yeah, you should be working, mate, but we really appreciate you joining us, and thank you so much for doing that.
I would like to ask him if he has a cousin or a brother called Darren Tickner. It would be strange, wouldn't it? But it's an unusual name, Tickner, because on the Superior show this morning at 11 o'clock, we have at Bean Smitten, B-E-A-N Smitten, who's giving Bunker listeners and Scoff and Quaff listeners 10% off premium coffee if you quote the word quaff, Q-U-A-W-P. Right. And he's Darren Tickner.
Is he?
What do you think?
Nah. We beat someone at racing called Paul Tickner. We beat
really?
Them. We smashed them out of sight. Yeah.
It is an unusual name, I think.
Nah. It's
unlike
quite common.
Andrews.
That's common. We've also had a tweet from the lovely, gorgeous Sally Laker, purveyor and maker of the most fabulous cakes. And you can follow Sally on the Twitter at Sally4Cakes, Sally number 4 Cakes. And thank you so much, Sally, for all your support. We really do appreciate it. Oh, blimey. AK Pet Services are tweeting his normal range of dog photographs.
Yeah, do you see the collie waving?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that picture.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Or he could
it?
Be applying deodorant, of course.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Thank you, Adrian.
Yeah, sure.
And Phil Thorne has tweeted in. Phil, I just want to say a big thank you to Phil. Phil was our pop-up radio producer.
He was tireless.
And he did a fabulous job for us last week, recording all the interviews, getting everything ready and doing all the technology. And
he didn't leave his station.
He did not. He sat there all day doing everything technical. And both Jules and I would like to say publicly on air a huge, huge thank you to Phil Thorne for helping us immensely
and
with that.
And also off air, we'd
program.
Like to say the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Samson Gas says, no relation, my dear. So he's sitting in his van listening.
Yeah, exactly.
Has he got any boilers to see to? Just sitting in his van.
He's probably waiting for him to bed in, isn't he?
Oh, is that what they do?
I don't know. I just made it up.
Can anyone smell gas?
We've also had a tweet from Made in Kent.
Right.
Who says, listening in to Vanilla Webb and Jules Sirkin right now on Kent Business Radio. It's your show, so tweet in. Absolutely. Made in Kent is run by Mark Smith of Whitstable Stave Shop fame. And Made in Kent is a free-to-use resource where anybody that's running a business in Kent can list their business and tell people about it. It's started off as a manufacturing site for manufacturers, but basically if you're doing anything in Kent, you can look at it. Do give them a follow on the Twitter, made_in_Kent. Do have a look at that. Who else have we got? Blimey. Ken Heron has tweeted in. The lovely Ken from Florida, co-host of the LinkedIn Lady Business Show on radio over there.
He's going out to do a talk in Singapore.
He is indeed, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, somebody's tweeted. Oh, it's Adrian again. He's tweeted a picture of a baby and a dog with cake all around their face, and it just says cake. Right, tomorrow, manana, the Federation of Small Business, pensions, do you know the facts? Guest speaker, Steve Kilfoy. Steve was on this show a couple of weeks ago talking about auto-enrolment, and there's a special event that the FSB are running tomorrow, manana, at the Moat Tea Rooms in Canterbury, and it's from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m., and it's Are You Compliant? And it's The Law on Workplace Pensions Has Changed. Every employer with at least one member of staff now has new duties, including enrolling those who are eligible into a workplace pension scheme and contributing towards it. You need to take the appropriate steps to make sure your eligible staff are enrolled into a pension scheme. Even if you already pay contributions into a pension scheme, even if your staff say they don't want it, you still have to set it up. There is nobody that can escape this, and so many people are making mistakes with this and will start to get fined. So you should attend any business which has staff or is thinking about recruiting staff in the future, as well as any business wishing to increase their business by networking. Come to the event in Canterbury and make sure you and your business is prepared for pension auto-enrolment. Steve Kilfoy of Squirrel Financial Planning is an FSB member, and pensions are his hot topic. And there are refreshments and a buffet provided, and that's tomorrow, 5 p.m. at the Moat Tea Rooms in Canterbury. And you really do need to go along. Please, if you're running a business, do not ignore auto-enrolment. You cannot afford to ignore it. And even if you have your staging date and it's 18 months away, you need to be doing it now. So many people have been caught by leaving it too late to start setting it up.
Yeah.
It is another one of those government organised things that is just one big heap of red tape, bureaucracy and amazing time-wasting things. But it has to be done and it takes an awful lot of time. So do go along to the event tomorrow and find out what you need to do and where you can get help to do it. Talking about business, though, one of my great passions, as you know, is to tell people repeatedly about the employment marketplace. So, smugly, I have the new figures.
All right.
And unemployment in Kent has dropped again
for
the 15th consecutive month. The number of people on unemployment benefits has fallen in Kent, and that's following the now national trend. There were 759 fewer claimants in April. We have a total of only 18,000 people, and this is according to the Office of National Statistics. Every local authority in the county recorded a fall in the number of people on job seekers allowance. The largest decline was seen in Thanet, which is normally the worst area, where 131 people, extra people, left the Dole Quick queue, bringing Thanet's unemployment down to just 2,700 people. Okay. The second highest in Kent. Swale and Maidstone were also strong performers, down 116 and 114 people to 1,424 and 1,213 respectively.
That's got to be good news.
Yeah, the fall in benefit claimants in Medway, which has Kent's highest total, has slowed, but it's still falling, and it fell by another 45, and there are now 3,800 people claiming benefits in Medway. Across the southeast, there were 197,000 people out of work between January and March. That's a fall of 7.5%. And the number of people claiming job seekers in Kent in April fell again. The unemployment rate in Great Britain was lowest in the southeast at 4.2%. Bearing in mind, in the southern countries of Europe, it's running at 28%. And we're down at 4%.
Yeah,
that's kind of amazing.
Excellent, yeah.
The claimant count rate was also the lowest in the southeast at 1.3%. So the jobs front is looking really good. In fact, it's looking a bit dodgy now because increasingly we've got lots of skill shortages and it's getting harder to fill jobs.
There are lots of stories I have about benefits and we haven't got much time now. But there's one person I know who is on benefits because she had the couple who were unmarried had the man had in the relationship had a son who had learning difficulties.
Right.
So they were sort of, he was in the caring role and the boy kept getting sent home from school.
Right.
So the man never ever worked.
Right.
As the kid hit puberty and got 16, he left home, ran away and basically left. So they lost their benefit for looking after him.
Yep.
Both of the couples had been not working. The man hadn't worked because of the benefits and the woman had only worked part-time. In a restaurant. Now that they haven't got the son's benefits, they're both working flat out. The guy's got his own business suddenly.
Right.
You know, they're self-sufficient. So
yeah,
this
absolutely.
Whole benefits trap
absolutely.
Gets
you
my
know,
goat on occasion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's a lot of nonsense talked about benefits. There's lots of people that need to be on benefits because,
yeah,
you know, they have no choice.
Yeah.
They have no other choices. They have no other options. Their circumstances are such that they need the help of the rest of society.
People that are severely ill.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And there are some people that struggle with employment for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of reasons why people are unemployed. There's a vanishingly small number of people that are scamming the system. Vanishingly small number of people that are claiming benefits when they could work. There are not that many. Don't believe everything you read in the Daily Mail. It's just not true. It's a vanishingly small number of people. Most people want to work, and there are reasons why they can't, which stops them, and that's one of those things, which is why the unemployment numbers will never be fully eradicated. There will always be 1.5 million people that aren't working, no matter how many jobs you've got, because their circumstances don't allow them to.
But there are still people that are on benefits that work a certain amount of hours and they turn down more work because otherwise they lose their benefits.
Yeah, there's top-up benefits. There's top-up benefits.
Which is sort of a trap thing.
Yeah, they're trying to address that with the new universal benefits system, aren't they? And that's a huge, huge system and a huge, huge change in the whole benefit system. And they're trying to address that, but it's not easy.
No.
You know, because people have different circumstances and different issues that they face. And, you know, at the end of the day, nobody wants to make anybody live in hardship when they don't need to.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, as a society, it's one of the things that we're proudest of is that we help people that need help.
Yeah.
And quite right too. I think you can read an email.
Okay, I will. There's a Thames Path. Which is a 50k charity walk for water. Are you up for a challenge, they say. It's join the team at Fields of Life and help make a difference to someone's life in East Africa. The aim is to raise enough money to build a fresh water well in northern Uganda, which will provide clean, accessible drinking water, which is, of course, essential to life. This is on Saturday, September the 12th, so it's a diary date. 8:30 at Bishop's Park in Fulham in London. Runnymede Pleasure Ground is the finish at 7 p.m. That's 50k. The cost is 39 registration fee and a target sponsorship of 295 minimum required. You can go to www.thamespathchallenge.com. That's Thames, T-H-A-M-E-S, pathchallenge.com. www.debbiecameron.com. And that's from the lovely Deborah Cameron.
Debbie, haven't seen Debbie for ages.
You can also have a look at the fieldsoflife.org website, which is on kentbusinessradio.co.uk as well.
Cool. You can read another email, I think.
Very kind of you.
Chaucer
Direct have been recognised as one of the UK's top insurers for customer service. They've been ranked as one of the top insurance companies in the country for customer service, according to the Institute of Customer Services and the International Customer Management Institute, the ICMI, having received a string of awards for customer satisfaction. In 2014, they won a place as the top 50 companies for customer service, which benchmarks and rewards excellence in customer service. I have to comment on this. Who writes these press releases?
You did.
I did not. It's not one of mine.
Yours are worse.
You can go. You're so bitchy.
I know.
3w.chaucerdirect.co.uk to find out more. But the judging took place in March, and the results will be revealed at a London ceremony in October of this year. Russell Wilson, contact centre manager, who hopefully didn't write this, and himself a winner of the ICMI UK National Call Centre Awards, believes that the repeated success of the team is due to a positive attitude and a real passion to help customers. So well done, guys. That's Chaucer Direct. Fabulous. They've got an office in Whitstable, haven't they?
Yes, that's where they're based.
And they were on our show not long ago.
They were a few months ago. They were on the show and they've done loads of things in the community.
Yeah.
They were also one of the call centres in the southeast for Red Nose Day.
That's right. You're still wearing yours. Glad to see
that. I am indeed, yeah. I've had an email from Gillingham Football Club.
Hello.
From Nick Nicolaou. And he says, hi, Business Bunker. Gillingham Football Club have an annual golf day, and it will be taking place on Wednesday, the 8th of July. And it will be at the Upchurch River Valley Golf Club. And there will be a full English breakfast, 18 holes of golf, three-course evening meal, and a presentation of prizes. Four ball teams consisting of three members from your company and a Gillingham player or member of the Gillingham Football Club management team will make up the teams. It costs just £295 plus VAT per team. And to book, you can contact Nick, and you can contact Nick by ringing him at 01634, that's Medway, 01634 350 350, or you can email him at nick@priestfield.com. That's nick@priestfield.com. So if you'd like to play golf with a Gillingham footballer or member of the Gillingham management team, and you can do that at the Upchurch River Valley Golf Club on the 17th of July. So do check that out if you're into golf and a bit of football. That would be rather nice.
Yeah, I love the golf and the football. Maybe they do a swap halfway through.
Absolutely.
There's a lunch network which is coming up. It's on Thursday the 25th of June. That's diary date. At the Singleton Tandoori in Ashford. 12 to 2. Members are £20. This is from the Kent Invicta Chamber. Details, as usual, on the Kent Business Radio website.
Cool. Thank you for that.
Did you know, Paul Andrews, that artisan bread, you know, Ingrid Eiselfeld, who's in Whitstable, she's a gluten-free baker. She is on the Virgin Pitch to Rich. Oh. And she is asking Business Bunker listeners to please vote for them. They need about 40 more votes, and they need them by today.
Get voting, folks.
Get voting. It's at Artisan AB. They're on the timeline. But vote for them. There's a link there that I've just put out, tweeted out.
Cool.
Please do that.
We've had an email from Sam Edwards at We Love Kent. And it says, hi, Business Bunker. We Love Kent are launching Kent's largest creative writing competition for Kent primary schools. We'd love the Business Bunker to talk about it and make sure no one misses out on this fantastic competition. The competition will culminate in a huge event at the Britannia Theatre with celebrity guests, artists and entertainers to make sure that our competition final finishes in style. Please get in contact with us for further details, and you can contact Sam by emailing him at sam@welovekent.co.uk, or you can go to their Facebook page, which is facebook.com/lovekentapp. Love Kent app. So do find out about that creative writing competition, and as we find out more details about it, we will let you know. Go. You've got plenty of time.
Small shops need to be covered by rules on display and advertising of tobacco. So since April of 2012, it's been illegal to display tobacco products. at the point of sale in large stores such as supermarkets. A large store is a store with a relevant floor area exceeding 280 square metres and is based on the definition in the Sunday Trading Act. From 6th of April of this year, this applies to all shops, including the average small newsagent. So this is rather important, I think, for the smoking industry.
This is brought to you by Fag Ash Lil.
I don't smoke. The law states as follows. Cigarettes, cigars and rolling tobacco will be required to be stored out of sight to the public. Perhaps they would put those magazines out of sight too. Very embarrassing when you go in with people. Tobacco products can only be displayed in defined circumstances. And the most common will be the requested display where the storage unit is opened to facilitate the sale to a customer who has already provided proof that they are over the age of 18, Ben. The unit must only remain open for as long as it takes the customer to look at the available stock and make their selection and then for the item to be removed. And the store, you can just imagine the inspector skulking about.
How much more ridiculous are we going to get in this country?
Goodness me.
Stupid.
Actually, when I was at Detling last week, I met a guy who was selling, a really nice guy, I think he was Canadian, was selling those electronic cigarettes.
Oh, the vaping things. Yeah.
I've got his card at home. I might get him on the show for you. But he was talking about the productivity, it's a bit more interesting than this, that, you know, when people are going outside to have fags,
yep.
The loss and productivity of the workforce.
Yeah.
Because they've got to get out of the building, down the lift, you know, blah, yep. blah, and stand outside, have their fag, then come back. So,
if you're trying to suggest that you don't have to do that with vaping, you ain't going to get anywhere because most businesses have burned vaping inside as well.
Yeah, and they're saying actually that they're just as bad for you in some ways. And cigars apparently are bad.
Do you know what?
We don't smoke, though.
We're all going to die.
Well, there is that. I'll probably die of eating cake.
There's one sure way of dying, and that's getting born.
Anno Domini.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want me to read more of this, or no. were you bored?
No, I'm bored with you
I was
now.
I was a bit bored with that one.
It's just that businesses out there that are running small news agents are aware that it has come into force now, and you've got to hide the cigarettes and tobacco products.
Yeah.
And they might not know that because it has only been enforced for large businesses up until now.
Yeah.
But now it's everybody. I've got an email here. It says there's only 50 tickets left for a lunch in the magnificent Fairfax Hall. Excuse me, that's Leeds Castle. Have you booked? Are you thinking about joining us for this year's Leeds Castle Classical Concert on Saturday the 11th of July? Have you taken a look at our brand new website? If you are thinking about purchasing a picnic-style ticket, then you have plenty of time. However, if you would like a seated ticket, then now is definitely the time to buy before they sell out. Purchase tickets online, or you can email us at Leeds Castle, or you can call us on 01622, that's Maidstone, 01622-470-099. And hold on, let me find the website, which is right down the bottom. Oh, no, there's an email address. It's hospitality@heritage-events.co.uk. Oh, and their website is www.heritage-events.co.uk. So do check that out. That's the Leeds Castle Classical Concert, which is taking place on the 11th of July this year. And more public information brought to you about driving licence changes.
All right, what's that?
As from the 8th of June this year, the paper counterpart to your photocard driving licence will no longer be valid and will no longer be issued by the DVLA. The counterpart was introduced to display driving licence details that could not be included on the photocard. These details include some vehicle categories you are entitled to drive and any endorsements or penalty points that you may have got. Please note this does not affect the photocard licences issued in Northern Ireland. Penalty points or endorsements. From the 8th of June, new penalty points and endorsements will only be recorded electronically and will not be printed or written on either the photocard licence or the paper driving licence. From this date on, if you commit an offence, you will still have to pay an applicable fine and submit your licence to the court, but the court deals with the paperwork will change. Photocard licences, the court will retain the paper counterpart and only return the photocard to you. For paper licences, the court will return it to you, but they won't have written or printed the offence details on it. This means that after the 8th of June 2015, neither the photocard driving licence nor the paper licence will provide an accurate account of any driving endorsements you may have. Instead, this information will be held on the DVLA's driving record and will be checked online or by phone or by post. Thank you all. There is a problem with that.
Right.
Once they've removed the paper part of the licence, if you try to go to France and hire a car, they will still demand to see the paper part of your licence.
Oh.
So there's a little bit of a problem that needs sorting out with the EU there.
And probably Spain as well.
Yeah. You don't lose it because there isn't one. You have to destroy it. And therefore, when you go to those countries and are asked to produce it, you're going to have a bit of a problem.
That's crazy.
It's been thought through.
Realia marketing team have expanded further with the addition of a new Markham's account executive, Tiani Howard. She joins Realia to work on creative projects for both existing and potential new clients, supporting all aspects of the business. And she's joined from a team from a print company based in Kent. She specialises in artwork management in a pre-press role and has developed a keen eye for detail and an in-depth knowledge of the creative process. Well done there, Tiani.
Fantastic.
Howard.
Thank you for that. Well, do you know what? We're just at the end of the show.
And do you know, considering we haven't done much work, Ben's done all the work.
Yeah.
It's gone quickly, hasn't it?
It has gone really quickly, as always. I'd like to say a big thank you to all of today's guests, Mr. Ben Towers.
Thank you.
Of Towers Design and Social Marley. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Ben, and you're welcome back anytime. And we wish you all power to growing your business and with your GCSE results. We also have heard from the first tranche of interviews from the Kent 2020 Live Business Support Base Camp with the lovely folks from Rift Accounting. And we heard from Hilary Steele, Jane Ollis and Amy McManus. Thank you for that. Next week, we will have another group of people that we interviewed at that show. And we also heard from Dr. Simon Raby and Toby Lindsay from the University of Kent Business School, and Martin are on the Trait Transformer. As I say, there is a link on the Kent Business Radio website where you can find out all the details about that fantastic project. Do look it up. Most of all, we'd like to thank you, the people and businesses of Kent, Southeast England, and apparently a few in the United States have been tweeting Ben as well. Yeah. So thank you all for joining in with the show.
Going global.
Going global. Thank you for tweeting. Thank you for emailing. Thank you for speaking to us and following us and listening to us on the Business Bunker Show. Coming up on Channel Radio at 5 o'clock, we had the ladies' favourite, Mr. Craig Avery.
There's and a his stripy socks. Already.
Absolutely. At 7 o'clock, we have 18 tracks of unsigned new up and coming music with Mr. Jamie Andrews and the New Potatoes Show.
Fabulous show.
That's followed at 9 o'clock by the absolutely stonkingly awesome Mr. Boy George with the Club Culture Show.
We love him.
And then for the first time tonight at 11 o'clock, we have the Big Noise.
What's that?
It's a heavy metal show with Mr. Phil Thorne. At 11 o'clock tonight. So do stay tuned to channelradio.co.uk. We will be back on the Business Bunker with you next week. That's me, Paul and Jules, saying goodbye. See you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.